This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
It means that the Gambia is following the trend in the world and also respecting its human rights obligations.
That's Demba Ali Jawo, a Gambian human rights activist, on the president's announcement that 22 death row inmates have their sentences commuted. Also, nearly 900 children have been released by a Nigerian militia in an effort to halt the use of children as soldiers. And in Zimbabwe, a court ruling brings chaos to the country's main opposition party. We'll have these and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour. In the Gambia, the government has commuted the sentences of 22 death row prisoners to life in prison. This followed a visit to the West African country by Amnesty International, which raised human rights issues with Adama Barrow, including the abolition of the death penalty. Reporter Pa Nderi Mbai reports.
Barrow told Amnesty International that his government is committed to abolishing the death penalty, saying it wouldn't be part of the upcoming new Gambian constitution. Demba Ali Jawo is a Gambian human rights activist who was a founding member of the defunct Amnesty International Banjul office. He applauds the government's move to commit the death row sentences.
It means quite a lot. It means that the Gambia is following the trend in the world and also respecting its human rights obligations. Because, as you know, as a member of the United Nations, the UN has already encouraged its members to abolish the death penalty. So, you know, I mean, if the Gambia has done that, it means it is definitely going on the right direction.
The Gambia has witnessed a recent surge in crime. Unemployed youth seems to have topped the list of offenders. Supporters of the death penalty claim it would help to reduce crime. But Demba Jawo disagrees.
I think studies have already shown that having the death penalty is not a deterrent to violence. The United States is a good example. You have many of the states in the U.S. have the death penalty, and yet there is violence, there is gun violence all over the place. You know, people are being killed virtually on a weekly basis. So it is definitely not a deterrent to violence.
Amnesty International's West and Central Africa Director, Marie-Evelyn Petros Barry, said committing the sentences was an important milestone as the Gambia moves away from the death penalty. United Kingdom-based Gambian human rights activist Ablai Job points out that the Gambia has been at the mercy of dictator Yahya Jammeh for over 22 years. He notes that during Jammeh's rule, many people were killed, tortured, and wrongly sent to jail.
Therefore, what his government should have done was to comprehensively look at the cases one by one and be able to look for what faults, what defects were within the system that allowed the judicial system to do this in a country as tiny as Gambia under a regime which we all know was tyrannical, which we all know did not respect the rule of law, which we all know could put somebody into death row for doing nothing except for being politically different.
Amadou Sakre Diagne is the founder of the Coalition for Change Gambia, a Gambian human rights organization. Diagne was sentenced to life imprisonment during Jammeh's rule for printing a T-shirt calling for an end to dictatorship. He was freed after Jesse Jackson intervened on his behalf.
The government was committed to abolishing the death penalty, and as such, it made sense to commute all of the sentences to life so that in the very near future, we can do away with the death penalty and we won't have anyone on death row. I think the review would come if it's going to be commuted to something else, like setting them free. But as far as from death penalty to life, it's the appropriate step.
Amnesty also raised the case of the three Gambian environmentalists who were allegedly killed by personnel of the police intervention unit. Amnesty also urged the Barrow government to repeal laws that restrict freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
The World Health Organization warns that attacks on medical teams in the Democratic Republic of the Congo could make it impossible to contain the Ebola outbreak there. The warning comes after Maimai militia fighters attacked the town of Batumbo earlier this week. The town is considered the center of the outbreak that has caused more than 1,000 deaths in the eastern part of the country. The WHO said Ebola work has stopped nearly 5 days in Batumbo and surrounding areas. The agency said without commitment from all groups to cease these attacks, it is unlikely that this outbreak can remain successfully contained in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. The outbreak is the first inside an active conflict area. Heavily armed militias and warring rebel groups have been fighting in the region for years. The area also is close to Uganda and Rwanda, leading health officials to prepare for the possibility that the disease could cross the border. A local militia group in northeastern Nigeria has released almost 900 children, including 106 girls, who have been used as fighters. The Civilian Joint Task Force announced the release today. The CJTF is a militia that supports security forces fighting against rebels in the northeast. A representative for the United Nations Children Agency, Mohamed Fall, praised the action, saying children in northeast Nigeria have suffered the most from conflict. The CJTF militia signed a plan in 2017 to stop using children as fighters. Since then, nearly 2,000 children and young people have been released, and the group has not recruited children. It is estimated that 3,500 children were recruited and used by non-state groups in Nigeria between 2013 and 2017. Children released by armed groups often struggle to fit into civilian life. They lack education or work skills. UNICEF works with state officials and partners to support reintegration programs. A controversial decision by Zimbabwe's High Court has plunged the main opposition political party into chaos. Addy Gondo gives us more about the issue.
Justice Edith Mshore made the ruling in a 2014 case brought before her by Elias Mashavire, the party's Gokwe District Organizing Secretary, who challenged Tsvangirai's decision to appoint Nelson Chamisa and Elias Mzuri as two of his three deputies, along with the current leader of the other MDC formation, MDCT President Thokozani Kuphe.
And we welcome the judgment. All of it, 100% of the judgment, we welcome it. And the next point, as you say, it is to contact the other leaders, elected leaders in our 2014 Congress of the movement and see how we can implement the judgment in its entirety. So we should be able, possibly by early next week, to begin to talk to the public on how far we are as far as the implementation of the judgment is concerned.
The judgment by Edith Mshore ruled Chamisa's appointment as MDCT vice president is ultra vires the party's constitution and therefore null and void. Further, it directs the MDCT to hold an elective extraordinary congress within a month. In addition, the judge ruled that all the decisions made under the Nelson Chamisa administration are invalid and he cannot preside over party matters. Responding to the court decision, various MDC officials such as David Coulthard have described the order as brutal foemen or empty thunder, and the Nelson Chamisa-led MDC Alliance national spokesperson Jacob Mfume speaks on the judgment.
Fundamentally differ with the judgment. We are going ahead with our Congress. We are taking advice from our lawyers as to how we proceed in terms of appeal or if the judgment has an impact on whatever it is that has happened and what will happen.
Mafume earlier stated that the choice of leadership of any political party is the sole preserve of that party. Other MDC Alliance officials allege the court ruling as an insidious ZANU-PF plot to torpedo Chamisa's leadership of the country's main opposition. The MDC Alliance defines itself as an electoral bloc formed between seven political parties. Political analysts also question the effect of the judgment, considering the fact that MDCT, led by Thokozani Kupe, held an elective congress at which its leadership was elected. Thomas Stole, an analyst, speaks.
Yeah, I think the ruling came out recently is just and fair. The only issue with it is just that it has been overtaken by events. So I think the timing of the ruling itself is problematic in the sense that a lot of events have happened. We now have MDC Alliance, which was not there before. But if you look at the ruling itself, given how Chamisa grabbed power and how the former president of MDCT, that is Morgan Tsvangirai, appointed his two deputies, I would say the ruling is fair and just. Only that it has been overtaken by events. That's the problem that I have, the issue that I have with it.
The MDC Alliance will hold its elective congress between May 24 and 26 in Gweru, Zimbabwe's third largest city. Chamisa is poised to go to Congress uncontested after all of the party's 13 provinces endorsed him to lead the party for the next 5 years. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF's national spokesperson, Simon Kaimamoyo, has scoffed at the MDC allegation of manipulating the judiciary and distanced his party from involvement in the MDC Alliance's internal affairs.
Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
Some Ugandan officials say they are concerned about armed militia members infiltrating refugee camps for South Sudanese refugees. The External Security Organization says the militia is recruiting both South Sudanese refugees and Ugandans to fight in South Sudan. The militia members also are accused of stealing food from refugees. Catherine Namdi reports from Kampala.
Ugandan security officials are reporting an increased number of armed South Sudanese entering Uganda in Lamwo District. James Nibinson Chidega is the resident district commissioner for Lamwo District. Chidega, who heads the district's security committee, says the rebels from the Sudanese People's Liberation Army in opposition, SPLA-IO, have pitched camp at the Uganda-South Sudan border. From there, they easily cross to Uganda. He says they are there because of the slow pace of efforts to bring opposition fighters into the South Sudan military under last year's peace deal.
There is ceasefire still, but this peace talk which is going on, they have not yet come to conclusion. So the rebels from South Sudan have not yet been joined with the government force. They have their own camp around the border here, our border, near our border, and other places, still waiting for the final signing of the peace agreement.
Chidega says the Juba government accuses Uganda of feeding rebels since they raid camps and steal food.
They always come and get food and drive with it to South Sudan. That's not right. The food must be consumed here. They must be within here. Because now we are getting complaints from the generals from there that food that are coming from the camp are the one now being supplied with the rebels.
Joseph Ochet is the Director General of Uganda's External Security Organization, ESO. He says the armed South Sudanese are recruiting militia fighters in the refugee settlements.
And they have come with a lot of threats. They have brought into those refugee camps a number of weapons. They are using the camps to recruit, and some of the recruits are Ugandans, to go and fight in South Sudan. And they are causing a lot of what we'd call insecurity within Uganda.
Jessica Ababiku is a legislator from Adjumani district, which hosts refugee settlements. She says more must be done to block the South Sudanese militia from entering the country.
The police are trying their best, but they have failed to help the people. People are robbed. Things are taken successfully. So at the border points, we need a detach. Uganda is hospitable. How do we sustain this hospitality when people are being threatened from a neighborhood country?
But Ochwet, with the SO, says the Uganda government is handling the situation.
It's a big challenge for us, but we are fighting it. We are increasing on our deployments in those camps almost on a daily basis.
Uganda is home to over 800,000 South Sudan refugees, most of whom fled fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those backing his former vice president, Riek Machar. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And returning to news of the Gambia, the government of President Adama Barrow has imposed a 75% sales tax on the country's only beer manufacturing company, Banjul Breweries. Now, Banjul Breweries is on the verge of winding down operations, saying it cannot handle what it calls such an exorbitant tax increment. The taxes were increased from 10%. We have reporter Pandere Mbai again with more.
Over 200 workers at Banjul Breweries are likely to lose their jobs. If the company closes, hotel and restaurant workers are also likely to be affected because they rely on the company to provide services to their customers, particularly visiting tourists. Buri Dabo is a sales manager at Banjul Breweries, known as Julbrew.
Right now, we have sent 18 people home. And in fact, today we were supposed to send another 20. But because we were invited by Parliament to understand the situation, then we decided to hold on to the number that we were supposed to send this week. Come Saturday, or likely Monday, we will definitely close down production.
Jules Brew is owned by a French company. It produces several types of beer and non-alcoholic soft drinks and juices. Dabo says the company has not been doing well financially for the past 10 years. He says it only became profitable last year, but he warns that with the recent tax increase, there is no way Julbrew can stay in business.
On the 10th of January, we implemented the policy, but immediately we implemented the policy, adding the 75% on top of the ex-factory price. The wholesaler price increased by 59.10%, and this really caused a downturn of our sales volume and turnover. So currently, we are negative.
The Gambia's Hotel Association is protesting the tax increase on Julbrew, which went from 10% to 75% this year. The association's officers say alcohol sales have dropped at most hotels. Gambian political activist Pasamba Jau thinks the government's move is misguided.
One would have expected that given our economic situation with the high level of unemployment, that our government would be providing incentives to businesses so that they would remain open and at least give employment to our people. But to tax an institution like Banjul Breweries, which has been in existence for over four decades, into pretty much closure, where over 200 jobs directly would be affected by that, I believe it is absolutely very sad and very disappointing.
Yankuba Dabo is the Director General of Gambia's Revenue Authority, GRA, the main tax administration office. He says his agency was not responsible for the recent tax hikes on alcoholic beverages. Information Minister Ibrahim Asila says he had been informed the finance ministry plans to review the tax increase on alcoholic beverages. This, he says, follows consultations the finance minister had with the ministries of trade and tourism on the matter. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
The U.S. military says an airstrike in Somalia has killed 13 Islamic State fighters. The U.S. Africa Command said late yesterday that the strike against the terrorist group was conducted in the Golis Mountains. AFRICOM said it believes no civilians were injured or killed. Another recent U.S.-launched strike killed three IS insurgents in Somalia. AFRICOM said in April that it had killed Abdul Hakim Dukub, an IS leader in Somalia. Nigerian authorities say the country is losing more than $1 billion annually to medical tourism as tens of thousands of people travel abroad in search of the best treatment. Nigeria's health ministry says it is building 6 world-class health centers to address the issue. Although, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, not even the president seems to trust health care in Nigeria.
53-year-old Ibrahim Bello, a former Nigerian lawmaker from Kaduna State, lost both his parents to diabetes. He was afraid the disease might run in the family, so he went for a medical exam. Unhappy with the quality of care at home, he flew to India like many of Nigeria's well-to-do.
Comparative analysis between Nigerian case and where I passed through in India, honestly, I cannot do it here. Because the margin is so wide that every Nigerian who has any health issue, his prayer is, how can he be moved to India?
Bello is one of tens of thousands of Nigerians each year who opt to travel abroad for treatment. Health officials and some medical professionals argue that good care is available in the country at private clinics. Nadi Hakim is a transplant surgeon who has been practicing for more than 3 decades. But for those who can't afford private care or medical tourism, there are a few good options.
I don't see why any Nigerian patient should go outside Nigeria to have a transplant when we can do it for them in Nigeria.
In April 2001, Nigeria and 4 other African Union countries met and pledged to target at least 15% of their annual budget for health care. Many years after, Nigeria remains far from the goal and ranks at the bottom of global health surveys. To provide access to high-quality care, authorities plan to build 6 new medical centers across the country, says Health Ministry official Nneka Oji.
So these centers of excellence are supposed to deliver those cares, those interventions that people would naturally go outside to seek. Things like cancer treatment, you know, brain tumors, brain surgeries, and fine surgery interventions.
But even Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, with access to the best health care in Nigeria, made several trips to Britain for medical care in his first term. In April, he railed against Nigeria's poor response to public health crisis, outbreaks of deadly disease, and mass migration of doctors. But critics who disagree will be waiting to see what the president will do to change the status quo. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website, voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 hours UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.